is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Jim? Is it working? Can you feel it?
Oh, yes, I can feel it, Lou. Feels great.
All right, and tonight is a very special Fiends, not just because we have Jim Babb making his guest hosting debut, but this is the two-year anniversary of the Freedom Fiends being on radio. So welcome back to the show, Jim, and happy Fiend birthday. We're still 29 in warm years.
It's great to be with you, Lou. It's great to be on The Fiends again. And, yeah, I'm really happy to be on for this special show, two-year anniversary. We're almost halfway to Alpha Centauri at this point. So, worms.
Yeah, worms. Worms. I had the pleasure of meeting you at Porkfest last year, and you came on during the very last show, and you carried me and Ben because we were falling asleep. And,
oh, that was a good time.
Yeah, it was a very good time.
Actually, my daughter Dorothy was on the Freedom Fiends before I was, so she made it onto the show ahead of me, you know, because she's just that awesome too. But that was a pretty excellent experience. I was really proud of her to see her have that opportunity. So it's just great.
Yeah, she had a pretty good achievement at Porkfest. Can you give us a little recap on that? Because it's been a while. We got a lot of new listeners now.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, she was 12 at the time, but they have this, it's like a market pitch competition. It's called Agora Pitch, and people make a pitch about their business idea to a panel of experts, and they're reviewed, and they're given a score, and then the crowd shows applause to determine the winner. And she had just started a 3D printing business and had some products for sale at Porkfest and was doing really good. And literally minutes before the competition, somebody said, "Well, Dorothy, are you going to go up there?" And she was like, "Well, So she had 15 minutes to prepare, and she put together a presentation, and she went up there, and she actually won first prize, which was an ounce of gold. Pretty impressive. Donated by Tim Fry at Roberts & Roberts Brokerage. And this was pretty excellent. It wasn't just any ounce of gold either. It was a Bernard von Notthaus's Liberty Dollar gold. So it's actually maybe considered contraband, as well as having its gold value. So this is a wonderful prize.
Yeah, that is pretty neat. And she was selling refrigerator magnets, and I got the Voluntarism V, and that thing was quite popular. A bunch of my friends saw me with it, and they went and grabbed them up, and then when I brought it back here, I had friends that didn't go to Porkfest that were just in love with it. I was thinking about getting a hold of you and say, "Hey, I need a shipment."
Well, and we can certainly work that out. The 3D printer's been working overtime getting ready for Porkfest this year. We also have a Freedom Fiends design this time. So, you know, there's some surprises in there. Some new and improved designs.
Let's hear about this Freedom Fiends one.
Well, you're just going to have to see it. I guess I'm going to have to mail you one since you're not coming to Porkfest this year. But just going to leave it as a surprise for those that get to receive it. One Fiends host has received one in the mail already. But we'll have some for the others as well.
Okay. Who was it that received it? Because I want to start digging and get info.
MK has one, so she was our guinea pig, so we sent her a little batch.
Okay, well, that's pretty neat. And you have some interesting information for a little bit later on regarding the 3D printer and some other 3D printer related stuff, don't you?
Well, it's not a 3D printer, but the Ghost Gunner machine has been released, which is a desktop manufacturing device, but it's a milling machine. Instead of being additive, like a 3D printer, it's subtractive. So it takes a chunk of metal and it carves it into something that may be very useful.
Mm, excellent. Excellent. We do have a public service announcement. I am no longer in Bear Scat, Michigan. It turns out that with the merging of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico as part of the North American Union or whatever it's called, that Bear Scat has been renamed Bear Saskatchewan. And that directive can be found at newworldorder.org. So just want to put that out there.
Nice.
So, and you're in Philadelphia, right?
I am in the suburbs of Philadelphia in a secure and undisclosed location in the vicinity of Philadelphia.
Okay. Yeah, I spent a bit of time in Philadelphia back in the late 80s, and it was a pretty neat little town. I used to enjoy going on South Street and checking out the Freak Show.
It is a great city. It has all the problems of a corrupt government in a city, but it's also vibrant culture and, you know, has great food, which is kind of what I look for. So,
and we'll be right back after this trip to the market.
Weird friends.
Freedom fiends in the house. This is Lou, and I am with Jim Babb, and you've got some interesting technology news for us. When you and I met at Porkfest, you came on the Fiends, you were telling me about the Waze app, and I had never heard of it before because I'm really not that up on technology, but now I'm like sort of up on it. But you got some new stuff to share with us, and you were telling me about it just a couple days ago. Tell me about this Red Phone.
Oh, well, Red Phone is an Android application, and there's a iPhone app called Signal, and both of these use the same network, but basically it gives you free encrypted phone calls to somebody else that's using one of those apps, and it really works pretty darn good, especially if you're on a Wi-Fi and you have a lot of bandwidth. It is excellent, and it is free. It's easy to use. You just install the app and you use it to make a call. It's got some nice features where if you allow it to, it'll scan your contacts and it'll tell you everybody in your contacts that uses Red Phone or Signal automatically. And since I started using it maybe 6 months ago, at first maybe I had like three different friends that had it. And now when I go to my contacts, it's automatically updating. Now that I've got like 40 different friends that have it. So even though I don't really have conversations that, you know, where I'm discussing things that, you know, really need to be kept secret, I just love the idea of putting encrypted data, you know, into my stream and just, you know, give those Utah computers that the NSA has something to chew on. So, you know, just let them grind on that for a while. And if everybody uses this, basically their whole surveillance of our phone calls is moot. So I think it's a great technology that everybody should be using.
Yeah, it's when it comes to the encryption and gobbling up resources at the NSA, I'm all for it, and that's part of the reason why I'm starting to actually learn about technology, and I'm almost at, like, I don't know, third grade level. But, if they have to spend a lot of time trying to decrypt all these cat pictures and cookie recipes and everything else, That's really going to waste a whole lot of time. So that if there is somebody out there who's doing something that they're not allowed to do, but not something that they shouldn't be doing, that's going to gobble up a lot of resources and probably help them out a touch.
I think so. And because it's so easy. I mean, I love technology, but I'm not a programmer. And, you know, a year or 2 years ago, I'd be asking my real geeky friends, like, well, how do I secure this? What do I do? And the explanations are always really complicated. And I'm like, I need something really easy. So this is definitely in the department for people that want some security, but aren't really computer programmers or super tech savvy. And you know, I wasn't sure, like, how good is this? I'm like, can you trust it? Well, the Electronic Frontier Foundation published a scorecard where they reviewed, maybe a dozen different technologies for phone and text messaging. And Signal and Redphone got the perfect rating. Now, it doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean there's not some vulnerability. I would never trust my life on any piece of technology. But, you know, compared to the other options out there, it looks pretty darn solid. And The Intercept also ran an article recently where basically they advised, like, well, you know, since these Ed Snowden revelations, you know, how do we protect ourselves? The Intercept published an article also recommending the use of Redphone and Signal. So although I don't have the technical chops to actually verify that it's great, there's some really good experts have convinced me that this is a good option.
Your logical fallacy is appeal to authority because they're experts.
But you know what? When it's certain experts, of course, because I'm not an expert in just about anything. I need experts. So I like to be able to choose my expert, though.
Yeah. The whole appeal to authority thing, kind of, I get a joke out of, or get a good laugh out of some of these fallacies because people will throw the your logical fallacy thing around as if it's like solid concrete. And if, you know, if I say, well, Ludwig von Mises said this about economics, and people will say, well, you're just appealing to authority. You know, that doesn't make him right, you know, because he's Ludwig von Mises. Well, no, his track record is what makes him right. But it's
exactly.
It's kind of crazy that way. And a lot of people, their logical fallacy is appealing to your logical fallacy is.
I think the worst fallacy is because government.
Appeal to magic. And we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends right after this. Trip to the Market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends, happy 2-year on radio birthday.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Lou, and I am joined with my good buddy Jim Babb. And you were talking about the encrypted telephone application in the last segment, and a little review on that. That is, it's encrypted, and the encryption has been verified by the folks at EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, for no back doors. Is that correct?
Well, right. It's open source software. It's been audited. They have about like 12 different categories they rank it in. It's like how recently has it been audited? Is it open source? Is it encrypted in transit? Does the provider have access to it? There's a lot of different ways that somebody could sort of screw that up, and this seems to be pretty solid. Now, of course, we know we have a need for this, or, you know, maybe we don't need it anymore because I think the Supreme Court just ruled that spying, all this NSA spying is illegal, right? So should we just throw away our encryption, Lou? I mean, now that it's illegal, they won't do it anymore, right?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, when something's the law, you know, like, you know, the whole Fourth Amendment with the requirement for search warrants and probable cause and stuff like that. You know, we don't have to worry about this stuff happening anymore.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's written down on magic paper.
Right. So maybe it's even kind of silly to worry about this taking up, you know, takes up a little space on your phone. But, you know, and I'm sure Congress, you know, you could always call Congress, ask them to protect your privacy. So, you know, that's another option for you if you're not into encrypting your phone calls.
Yeah, and start with Mitch McConnell because isn't he trying to fast track the reauthorization of the Kill All the Patriots Act?
You know, I don't pay attention to those people. You know, I hear their name and my eyes glaze over, and I just, you know, I want to look at more cat pictures or something. So, no.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, but sometimes when the stuff's scrolling through on Facebeef or one of the other social networking sites, I'll happen to see it, and somehow it gets implanted in my brain, and I'll laugh and just say, silly status.
But, it is kind of, yeah, it's kind of interesting just to monitor them, because you think, well, they can't go that far, can they? And then, next week, oops.
They went that far. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if you look at all the things that people said could never happen in America, but they're happening in America, it's kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't Nixon, I mean, what did they impeach Nixon because he, like, wiretapped? Like one office or something like that.
Yeah, like a hotel room.
Yeah.
And then also he lied about it. So I think the cover-up was the big thing there.
Right, so he did a little bit of a wiretap and then told a little lie afterwards. And that was considered a big deal at the time, I guess, right? I mean, now they don't even, nobody, it's not even news when a politician lies. It's like, it's not even considered, that's just, oh, well, he was just, you know, he didn't mean that as a factual statement.
Yeah. I am 44 years old. I was born in 1970. And all my time growing up, you know, the name Nixon was synonymous with mud. His name was Mud. I mean, he was just, you know, just like an absolute disgrace, pariah, and everything else. And then after he died, he became sainted because people were talking about the good things that he did and speaking nicely about him. And I'm thinking myself, my God, what happened? It's kind of like in 1984 when the banner came down and they were at war with East Asia or whoever it was that they were at war with.
True.
So, well, yeah, you know, I don't know.
I think every presidency sort of makes you nostalgic for the previous ones because, you know, it's like it seems terrible at the time, but then when you get the next president who's twice as bad, you look back and be like, oh, you know, he was only at war with 8 countries. That was, you know, that was kind of nice, you know. we weren't bombing 7 continents at the same time, and there weren't troops patrolling the streets. So, remember those good old days? Yeah.
Yeah, Obama makes you nostalgic for Bush, and there's no telling who's going to make us nostalgic for Obama. But I won't be nostalgic because I don't care about those things.
Well, I wouldn't be too surprised if a Hillary presidency or a presidency or even a Rand Paul presidency makes us refuses the good simple times. I don't know.
Okay, let's say on the outside chance that Rand is elected, because he's definitely not the establishment favorite. And although he is neocon-ish, he's very neocon light. He's nowhere near like being a John McCain or Rand Paul or John McCain or Lindsey Graham or Mitt Romney or any of those others. How do you see a Rand Paul presidency playing out? Because I have my opinions on this.
Well, it is extremely hypothetical because I don't think he's part of the anointed class. You know, as much as he wants people to think he is, and, you know, he'll put on the yarmulke and say he wants to bomb people and, you know, act like he hates science, and he's doing everything that any, you know, good Republican candidate does, but he's just not one of the anointed. So I don't think that he's got the Goldman Sachs endorsement. I don't. So, but let's just say, you know, through some miracle, some kind of like Diebold programming error, he becomes president. you know, I think it'd be pretty much the same as all the rest. I don't. You know, you don't become president, you know, because you're willing to change things. You become president because you're willing to support the status quo. The status quo, right? So, you know, wouldn't really change anything. probably the only thing that might be different is everything that goes wrong would be blamed on libertarianism at that point, right? So
exactly.
So even though he says he's not a libertarian, he wants to distinguish himself from libertarians. He everything he says is not libertarian. Somehow he gets lumped in with libertarians. I guess they think he has that genetic disposition or something because of his dad, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking same with Ted Cruz, same with Glenn Beck. Now, it's interesting that people associate him with his father, and I don't really follow Rand too closely, and I've never really had any type of affection for him. I remember watching a couple videos of him speaking at places, and there was, I think it was Brown University he was speaking at, and he referred to Abraham Lincoln as the great emancipator. And I was like, oh my God, are you serious? Have you ever spoken to any of your father's academic friends? Really?
Has he ever heard a word his dad has said? You know, like that's where I just think like, gosh, you know, like Ron, you know, I don't really support, you know, hitting children. I think that's a bad idea, but Ron, you know, maybe in Rand's case, you know, you might want to reconsider that philosophy.
Let me teach you a little something about liberty, boy. Whack, whack, whack. Yeah, it's... But anyway, all right, so here's how I see it. Let's say he's just pretending to be a neocon to get the neocon vote, you know, which is what a lot of these great man-worshipping, hopeful libertarians are saying. But by the same token, the neocons are saying, well, what if he's just pretending to be a libertarian to get the libertarian vote? But anyway... So we don't know which face he's actually showing, but if he were to get elected, how long do you think it would be before you know somebody had the talk with him? Let's say he was just like his father and he didn't believe in intervention abroad, and let's say he brought home the troops and slashed the military spending left and right. How long do you think it would be before somebody from the air quotes, military-industrial complex, said, hey, you know what? We don't have this easy payday anymore. We're off the gravy train. The gravy train is coming to the station. How long do you think it will be before, oh, I don't know, all these vested interests that feed at the public trough decided that, well, this guy's bad for business?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we're talking about a trillion-dollar gravy train. Are they supposed to just be like, oh, turns out we're no longer needed. I guess I'll try to get honest work. Do you think they're just going to pack up and go home? I mean, of course not. Of course they're not going to pack. I mean, what will people do to protect an industry that is literally trillions and trillions of dollars? What limits would those people have? I can't think of any limits. They would kill anybody. They would blackmail anybody. They would lie. They would cheat. They would steal. They would... become remarkably competent to protect $1 trillion in gravy train. So, yeah, I don't think he'd have much of a chance. You know, I definitely don't think he would, even if he wanted to.
Well, let's take a look at the war on drugs, aka No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. Colorado legalized recreational cannabis use, and I believe the police departments and the prison unions are fighting against that legalization. They're suing the state to get it recriminalized.
Of course they are. You know, what kind of job are they going to get otherwise? Right? I mean, gee, you've been a probation officer as your career for the past 25 years. Like, what possible skills could you have that could translate into the productive sector? Like, I can't imagine.
Zero.
So, you know, there's a whole industry out there that revolves around that, and it's of course they're entrenched. So, you know, and some people say, well, you know, they've noticed that some prisons are for profit, right? They think like, oh, well, this is somehow, because it's been outsourced, somehow this is significant. It's like, it's all for profit. I don't care whether you get a check from the government or from a subcontractor. It doesn't matter. It's always for profit. You know, it's for the pensions, it's for the benefits, it's for the perks, for the paid time off, for the, you know, for the I'm too stupid to do something that people want to pay me for, so I have to get a job where we force people to pay me. So anyway,
it's ridiculous, but oh man. So, all right, yeah, let's get out the stupid stuff when we come back, get a little bit warmer, fuzzier, and talk about your cop blocking antics.
Okay.
More Freedom Fiends, 2-year anniversary, happy birthday to us, right after this trip to the market. Wings!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Freedom Fiends. Have I mentioned yet this second anniversary of Freedom Fiends on radio?
Happy birthday, Fiends.
Happy birthday, wee! So anyway, I am joined with Jim Babb here, and you have some interesting cop blocking stuff that you've been doing lately. Share that with us.
Well, it's something that we've done sort of sporadically around Philly, and people have done this kind of thing all over the country. But we call it the Checkpoint Minutemen, and what we do is we have these signs with reflective tape, and if we find out about one of these suspicionless checkpoints, some of us might go out there and stand in, you know, a couple blocks ahead of the checkpoint with our signs and warn people to turn off. And it's pretty fun. You know, it's the idea is that, you know, we try to have people ready to respond on a moment's notice. So that's why it's kind of, you know, we think of the Minutemen for that. But really, as we were doing it this past weekend, we realized the actual model is more like storm chasers. You know, where you watch people in a special vehicle that's outfitted for, while everybody else is running away from the tornado, they're driving towards it. They're like, and they're checking their computers, like, we found a hot spot. We and they head for it. So
like the movie Twister.
That's kind of what we do. Yeah. So you know, but you know, sometimes those guys do die though. So there is a bit of risk involved, but by using the Waze app, we can sit back and, like, if we say we know, like, Friday and Saturday nights in the summertime, there's going to be one somewhere. So we can pull up the Waze app and actually, like, scan the whole area while we perhaps sit in a bar and and relax. We just scan it. Then right around 11 o'clock, sure enough, sometimes we find one, boom. So it's kind of interesting, and it is surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, but it is effective. It actually saves people from going to jail. So it's kind of fun.
Okay. That leads me to the next question. Why would you want to do this? Why would you want to warn people about the police being out there and looking around?
Well, I think it's, not really fun to go to jail. So if I can help people not do that, I think it's a good thing. Some people say, well, what, you support drunk driving? That you know, that's not good. Well, there's studies that show that regular patrols where they're actually looking for impaired drivers are far more effective than concentrating all these resources and just hassling everybody that come through. So you know, we've seen what happens, and they're not getting the drunks that are in danger. They're getting somebody with an expired inspection or somebody who maybe had two glasses of wine with dinner, and they go right into these things. And I'm like, well, of course, officer, I'll be happy to talk to you and take your tests and do all this stuff. Boom. Now they got a DUI. They've got maybe lose their license. They've got thousands of dollars in lawyer fees. Their car may be impounded. Their life's ruined. It can be devastating. So, you know, it's sort of a community. It's a community service project to help people avoid that. And so, and if people really want to reduce the amount of actual drunk drivers out there, they should also be against these checkpoints. So, you know, we're not encouraging drunk driving. Just want to, you know, make that clear. I think that it's best that you know, nobody go out on the road impaired, but it's just too easy for them to mess with everybody. And that's why I call them the suspicionless checkpoints. You know, you pull up, they look in your back seat. Well, gee, there's no drunk drivers in the back seat. Why are you even shining your flashlight back there?
Yeah. Now, you came up with some insider information recently. Would you like to share that with us?
Oh, well, one of the times we did this was actually a couple years ago, but my friend Ken Krawchuk had an opportunity to sign up for the, like, Citizens Police Academy, like, I don't know, like, for people that want to volunteer to help the police. You can do some, like, little limited training, and I don't know what they have you do, but he got an opportunity to be a volunteer at a checkpoint and give us inside intel in real time as we were blocking it. So when we come back, I'll tell you some of the fun things that they were saying about our activities.
Worms. And we'll be back with the second hour right after this trip to the market. That's right. So, welcome back to the show, and I am looking for the intro, and I can't find it in my email here. I don't know what's up with that, but anyway, so, yeah. Oh, wait, here it is. All right, hour two. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And that should be a song of Fiend Phone for everyone except the government.
Right. What are they going to do with it? Right. But the important thing is that they can't use it. So
yeah, yeah. Or they will be shamed publicly.
Right. And in fact, some of our 3D models that Dorothy and I have worked on, we're releasing under the BIPCOT no government license. So if you wanted to, for instance, make your own voluntarist V refrigerator magnet, that will be fine as long as you're not from the government.
Yeah. So and that not? Fiend Phone for Everyone is a reference to founding fiend Nima Vedati, who did a song called A Gun for Everyone Except the Government, because they're just too dangerous with guns.
They could be dangerous with Fiend Phone, too. So I think that's a good analogy.
Yeah, and with this being the two-year anniversary of the Freedom Fiends being on the radio, I do have to give a shout-out to Michael, who, you know, largely put this together, along with founding fiend Nima Vedati, and just a shout-out to all the fiends that have come on board since that time. I had an opportunity to meet most of them at Porkfest, and then I was able to meet Randy at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest up here in Michigan, which, by the way, will be going on from August 10th. And you can get more information at miplc.org. And that will be held at the Circle Pine Center just outside Kalamazoo last year. So, yeah, the only fiends I haven't met yet, I think, are... I haven't met the Greens because they live in Scotland. I haven't met Hugo because he's down in Mexico. And I haven't met MK, although I probably walked past her a couple times at Porkfest last year.
I like the way the weird friends are now spanning the globe. I think it's a great cast of characters from Scotland to Mexico.
From American radio hosts. So, yeah, I mean, this cool stuff. I did a show with Dan not too long ago. That was a real hoot. I haven't spoken with his wife yet. I've spoke briefly with Hugo, but so, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, excellent. I like Michael and all, but it's the weird friends, I think, are really bringing the Fiends into a really enjoyable show. I like the way the different hosts, you know, get mixed. You get two different hosts. You get a totally different flavor. It's kind of like, I don't know, when I was a kid, I used to read read comic books, and there would be the Marvel team-up, where you'd get two different heroes that normally maybe wouldn't be in a story together, and they put them together for a story, and there you go. So it's like the Super Fiend team-up.
Yeah, and you're going to get a different perspective on different issues, and the subject matter is going to be different depending upon who's on the show. So I think that this gaggle of fiends that we have provides a nice variety, so it's not like listening to the same old stuff every single day. Because if you listen to Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck, you know, they'll say, oh, Republicans are bad, but Democrats are worse, so you need to go vote Republican and get that lesser evil. It'll still be evil, but it'll be lesser evil. So, anyway.
Worms.
But, so, yeah, something interesting that I saw today, and this was on debate.org, and the question was, should burning the American flag be punishable by death? Yeah. So anyway, earlier today, the survey was at 40% said yes. So that means 60% said no. But what does that say when supposedly free speech, freedom of expression, and dissent is supposed to be American values enshrined in the Bill of Rights, part of the U.S. Constitution. What is that supposed to say about America when you can be dissatisfied with the government and their flag and people will say, oh, you need to be put to death for that? How is that not North Korea?
I think it's worse than North Korea. I don't know.
Well, actually, North Korea, Chapter 5, Article 67 of their Constitution guarantees the right to free speech, assembly, free press, and demonstration and assembly.
Well, see, and it's written down on something, so that makes it, you know,
magic parchment.
Yeah, so I think that's great. I also saw that poll, and you know how internet polls are. You know, they really can't exactly be trusted too much, but the fact I read through some of the comments, which I thought were pretty funny, and one of the people that said yes said, definitely yes, because attacking the flag or burning the flag is like burning a person.
Oh God, yeah, I saw that one,
and I thought, well, you know, actually, burning a flag is well, first of all, it's an inanimate object, but it represents an organization of people that actually burn actual people. Okay. So they're offended that this is like burning a person while defending the people that go around the world and burn people for real. So I thought that was somewhat ironic. Sad that one person would vote yes on that. You know, just kind of amazing when you think about it.
Yeah. I'm only seeing four comments here that say that, yes, people should be put to death. The first one that I see here is, yes, it should. Burning the flag is essentially giving the U.S. government and people the finger. Well, I have no problem with giving the government the finger. And quite frankly, the people that support it deserve it too. It's spitting in the eye of veterans and all who love this country. While executing someone over this may seem a bit harsh, note that most other countries will do the same just for speaking against the government, let alone burning its flag. I think that for the sanctity of the flag and all it stands for, we should most definitely execute those who burn it.
Right, because it represents a country that's so great and so much better than those other countries that kill people for what they say.
Yeah, yeah. Or not to mention the appeal to, well, other governments do it fallacy.
Right. And that makes sense. Right. Other governments do it, so you should love your government that doesn't do it, so we want them to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So they're saying North Korea executes people for being dissenters, so we should too. Yay, America, USSA. Oh, that's my God. It's just ridiculous. Let's see now. Next one is...
Okay, do it.
For all the reasons previously stated, while there is the argument of freedom of speech, actively burning something is not speaking. It is an act with violent intent and an assault. Rather than punishment by death, a placement program may suffice, such as one-way ticket to Afghanistan, Haiti, or Somalia. Maybe then the assailant will appreciate what they had here.
Yeah, why not?
The U.S. military is here, and if they go to Somalia or Haiti or Afghanistan, they can have the U.S. military there, too.
But at least there's palm trees and stuff in Haiti, so that might not be so bad.
Yeah, Somalia might have them, too. I don't know. But the thing is, this guy says, I'm assuming it's a guy, because I would expect more out of a woman than stupidity like that. But it says that it's not speaking. It doesn't have to be spoken, because freedom of the press, if you're talking about the old-fashioned, you know, printed media, the newspaper, the pamphlets and things like that, that wasn't spoken either. That was written. You know, the whole part about free speech is supposed to apply to your writings, your speaking, your expression of yourself. Your expression of disdain for the enemy occupation force that you call a government, and your disapproval, it's, you know...
Well, wait a minute. Are you sure it wasn't just to protect the things that everybody agrees to, like the popular speech, right?
Oh, you mean like puppies and kittens are cute?
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, freedom of speech is great, you know, as long as we all agree, and we can vote to make sure we agree on what you're allowed to say, and that's still freedom of speech, right? Is it supposed to protect things that maybe everyone doesn't agree with? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, if you believe in liberty, and if you believe that the founding lawyers, you know, put the Bill of Rights in there to protect, you know, unpopular speech, to protect dissent, and to, you know, if advance these ideas, then yeah, it should be the unpopular stuff.
That is I think that is what it said in the sales brochure. I'm pretty sure that, and then, you know, people bought it. So, you know.
Yeah, but that sales brochure was like a late night infomercial. You know, when you order it,
results may vary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Results are typical.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to assume that many of these people that are saying that people should be put to death for it are probably the same ones that think that, you know, drawing Muhammad is, you know, in a caricature and everything else is just fine, and that Muslims should not get fired up over it. And yet here they're doing the same thing. You know, was it, there was a couple of idiots decided that they were going to do a shooting at a Pam Geller event. You know, I don't know what all the story is on that, but, you know, these statist, radical, fundamentalist extremists will call those people lunatics for going on a shooting rampage over cartoon. But here they are saying that people should be put to death for burning the flag. So how is that any different?
Well, it takes one to know one, right? So, you know, maybe that's why that this type of extremism is so offensive, because people see themselves in that type of activity when you're that kind of a religious extremist.
Mirka Akbar.
Yeah. I mean, but let's face it, I don't think these people represent the majority. I think most people obviously have more sense than that. You know, Muslims included, you know, most Muslims could care less what kind of cartoon people draw. They don't care. Most people don't care what you do to a flag. So, you know, I'm not going to let a couple loud mouths convince me that this is a popular opinion.
Okay, we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends right after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Freedom Fiends. 2-year anniversary on the radio. Terrestrial radio. And this is Lou, and I'm joined by Jim Babb. And welcome back.
Worms.
So anyway, yeah, this whole flag-burning thing, the rampant nationalism, I find it rather disturbing that people would get all fired up over burning the government's flag. You know, when that whole Bundy Ranch standoff was going on, you know, the BLM guys, they had the government flag on their sleeves, and the Bundy Ranch supporters were flying the same flag. And before they, you know, marched into potential battle, they bowed their head and they pledged allegiance to the government flag, and then they sang their oppressor's anthem. What's up with that?
I think there's some weird Stockholm syndrome going on there. Definitely, definitely something strange. It's like, it's really inexplicable. I mean, we're here, we're so mad at our government that we're going to come out here and we're going to stand with our guns and we're going to, you know, none shall pass. We're going to, you know, we're drawing the line here. But wait, hold on a second while we sing an anthem and prayer to these people we're protesting. Yeah. I don't get it.
If you tread upon us anymore, by golly, I'm going to wave your flag at you really hard.
Well, you know, yeah, what I think it is with a lot of people. They, you know, they have experience with the government in one area, okay, and they think, oh, the government's doing this thing wrong, so I need to get really mad about this thing, okay. But what they're really doing is agreeing with all the other 99% of things, okay. So that, of course, they want to fly that flag and say that prayer to the state, because they believe in the state. They just don't like that one thing that they're doing at that moment. But the overall concept to them, it hasn't really been questioned. And I think maybe that's what makes anarchists or libertarians or voluntarists different, is that, you know, we've seen this maybe from so many angles we're ready to just, you know, just can we just dump the whole thing? We're not looking to try to preserve, oh, that part of it's good and this part of it has to be changed. We realize that there's not a hope for one shred of it. So maybe that's what it explains, what those people are doing, flying the flag while protesting what that flag represents.
Yeah, I saw a quote earlier today, and I believe it was from Mark Twain, and I'm not even going to attempt to recall it properly, but it basically said that travel is the cure for nationalism, getting out there and seeing the rest of the world. I'm 44. I grew up during the Cold War era, and in fact, I joined the Army to you know, keep the East German police state from coming to America. Failed. But it's... I heard the evil empire speech and all this other stuff, and I heard how evil the Russians were, and then I met some Russians and found out that it wasn't quite right. It was basically the U.S. government was saying that, you know, the Russians were evil, and it was just the Russian government that was evil, or Soviet government. So it's all governments are evil. Just, you know, leave it alone. But when you think about the idea of nationalism, most people attach their affinity to a nation based upon the random landing of their DNA on one hunk of dirt over another. And I don't know how to say this gently, but had most of these flag waving patriots been born in the Middle East, most likely they would be Muslims right now. Had they been born in North Korea, had they been born in Pyongyang, they'd be saying that North Korea is best Korea. Because I've never been to another country where the government schools teach the children that their country is not number one and that some other country is number one. And even even England and Germany, who would be considered U.S. allies, they don't say, hey, we want to be like America. You know, they're number one. We're like number two and number three. You know, or we could fight over number two. They, you know, everybody.
Well, America is number one, Lou. Come on, you're not going to deny that we, you know, that I'm not saying we. I'm saying the United States is number one in the highest incarceration rate. Actually, That is not necessarily true. But for a long time, the United States had the highest percentage of people incarcerated. I recently heard that Seychelles, the tiny nation of Seychelles, has a slightly higher incarceration rate.
Now, where is Seychelles?
I don't know. It's out of the ocean somewhere. I don't know. But it is. All right. We can get into that more when we come back.
All right, we'll get the crack research team on it.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Freedom Fiends. Happy second radio birthday.
The terrible
twos.
Hey,
this is Luke. The terrific twos. Hey, this is Lou, and I am joined by special guest co-host Jim Babb, and we were talking about the debate.org survey of should burning the flag be punishable by death, and earlier today it was up to 40% that said yes, and now it's down to 18%, and you tried voting, but voting was closed, or you weren't registered to vote, or what was it?
I don't know. Yeah, I tried to vote. In fact, I was going to say yes, just because I thought it'd be funny. But maybe that's how everybody else votes on that, too. They're like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we all vote yes?
Sounds like you were disenfranchised.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was disenfranchised. I want my money back.
You didn't have photo ID. But anyway, there's one more comment that I want to read here. Yes, it should. Those traitors who burn our flags, our terrorists, and the punishment should be death by hanging or firing squad. P.S. The Founding Fathers would have executed these traitors. This is an America nation, not a traitor's nation. All flag burners should be executed for treason. Death to all the flag burners. Now, I did not misread that. I read that exactly as it was written. So, I'm not the illiterate one here.
I think there's only one conclusion we can come to. Government schooling works.
Yeah. Yeah. Now all we need is private education. Now, it's real interesting that that this person mentions treason, because isn't the definition of treason to, actually, declare war on the United States or to give aid and comfort to its enemies? I mean...
Well, I think first you have to swear allegiance, right? Like it's not true. Like, if I've never pledged allegiance to the flag and I burn it, I don't think that would be treason. But if I, pledge my allegiance to the flag and then I burn it, now that's treason. Yeah, it is.
Is it really? Treason.
Yeah, why not? You pledged your allegiance and now you're a liar and a flag burner. I just can't believe it's still a thing after all this time. Like, really? Like, first of all, that people even want to burn a flag. Second, that people get mad about it. Like, really?
Now, see, I take a different view from what you had just said, because I consider waving the government's flag as giving aid and comfort to the enemy.
And it is. That is.
Yeah, not burning it, waving it.
Right, but I just looked up the I mean, treason is a betrayal, right? Like... Mm-hmm. But if you've always been with the enemy, then it's not treason. But if you sort of switch sides and help the other side, then now it's treason. So the fact that you used to work for those guys, right? I mean, a long time ago. So at some point, your allegiance may have shifted. Am I right?
Yeah, I used to impose that flag on other people.
So. I don't know. Maybe that would be treason then. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that technically that might be the right word. So, and the fact that, as children, I was conditioned to say the Pledge of Allegiance, although I don't really consider that to be binding in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, what are you going to do?
What this really comes down to is somebody's going to throw out that phrase, and I find it to be a completely empty, meaningless phrase, where they say, well, you hate America. What exactly does that mean? You hate America. Go ahead.
I don't know. I was going to say, like, maybe, like, for instance, I look at something like Mount Rushmore, and I say, like, man, that was a perfectly good mountain. You know, like, somebody really messed up a really nice mountain out there. So I'm not going to take my kids there. You know, does that mean I hate America? Or what if I won't go to see the Washington Monument? Maybe that's what it means. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't know, and I'm just, you know, thinking out loud here, but what is America? Is America the Rocky Mountains, the Smoky Mountains, the beaches out on the West Coast and East Coast and Gulf Coast? Is it, I don't know, the grass, the rocks, the dirt, the many lakes in Minnesota, Michigan, and all this other stuff? Is it the people? I've never been to Rocky Mountains.
All of the above.
Yeah. Well, I've never been to Rocky Mountains, so I can't say that I hate them. I'm rather fond of those lakes in Michigan. I haven't seen Minnesota yet, but it's on my to-do list. I'm pretty sure I like the lakes out there. I like the beaches down the Gulf Coast. So when people say, you hate America, I mean, if they mean the government, yeah. I do. It's a thieving, murderous parasite. But America is not the government.
Of course not. But you know what? I think maybe when they started this, you know, those guys that wrote down "We the People," okay, like, boy, they really came up with something, didn't they? Like, people still believe that, like, oh, we are the government, right? That has got to be one of the most persistent, damaging lies that that we have ever been subjected to. You know, I always wondered, like, maybe, like, the early draft of the Constitution, it said something like,
we the states.
It said, me the Pharaoh, okay? and they tried it out with some test marketing groups, and it didn't play well, so they did some rewrites and eventually came up with "We the People," and that's worked for them.
Well, I guess a couple of people freaked out over saying "We the People" because it was supposed to be a convention of the states, and the justification for putting in "We the People," and I'm using air quotes for justification, was that there were some states that may not ratify it, so rather than saying "we the states," they said "we the people." Personally, I think, you know, it's like you said, trying to get people signed on to it and take credit for something that they had nothing to do. But there is no such thing as the people. The people is a fiction, like a state. So, yeah, it's just nonsense. If it was "we the people," okay, how did the women feel about it? How about the free blacks? How about the slaves? How about the unborn? You know, how about the non-landowners?
Right. How about the natives that were living here, you know, centuries before? So, yeah, but, you know, people really buy into it. I mean, how many times have you heard somebody say, you know, you're complaining about the government, and like, but we are the government. Like, they actually say that with a straight face. Like, are you serious? Like, so this police brutality, it's really just like people punching themselves, you know? Like,
yeah.
Stop brutalizing yourself. Stop brutalizing yourself.
If we are the government, the people of Waco were not murdered. They committed suicide.
Right. Yeah. Stop droning yourself.
Yeah. Now, there is one comment on the no section that I want to highlight here. It says, you don't own me, and you don't own my property. I will do what I wish with my property, including destruction of said property. As long as I don't hurt anyone, feelings don't count, then no crime has been committed. If I want to buy a piece of cloth with red and white stripes and a field of 50 stars on a blue background, then burn it, I will do so. If you try to stop me, you are in the very least a thief and definitely no friend of liberty and freedom. And I think that sums it up perfectly.
Now,
rather than getting so offended at burning the government's flag, you know, which, I mean, if I go steal a a flag from some flag waver and then burn his or her property, yeah, then I've done something bad. But if I go out and I buy my own flag and then decide to burn it, well, that's my property and I can do with it as I see fit.
I don't think any logical person could argue with that. And it's a surprisingly intelligent remark to find on that poll. But evidently it's been shared, I guess, because it went from 40% down to 18% in favor of the death penalty for flag burners. Evidently some sensible people have been exposed to that poll. So I guess,
yeah, obviously.
I guess, but we're making some progress.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, this whole nationalism thing is crazy. Like I said, you know, I grew up hearing how evil the Russians were, and then I met some Russians. I've been to a few different countries, and I found out that they're really not a whole lot different from us. They care about the same things. They care about their families. They care about their faith. They care about being able to get ahead and avoid the tax man and everything else. So, yeah.
My experience as well.
Yeah, I really don't see the reason for all this division.
You know, it is hard to explain. It is sort of like, I don't know, I think it really comes down to maybe that government school training has a lot to do with it. You know, it's from the sports teams and the, you know, cheering for your colors and waving that flag and saying the pledge and all this conditioning. But think about, I mean, that's what they have to do to get people to go along with this ridiculous concept of government, right? It's not like they just said, well, we're just gonna push it out there. They needed like generations of conditioning, and they need to take children and put them in a room for most of their lives, for their first 18 years. They need to do this incredible amount of brainwashing and conditioning. They need to pay people to spread messages through the media. They need to constantly, I mean, they're spending trillions of dollars just to keep this people like believing the idea. So, you know, it can't continue forever. So the fact that they continue to have to do these things is probably somewhat reassuring. That eventually people are going to be like, "What? Wait a minute!"
I just had an epiphany. It just came to me. Yuri Maltsev says that all government is socialist in nature. Big government, big socialism. Small government, small socialism. No government, no socialism. Because socialism is an ideology of envy and hatred. It cannot create anything. It cannot build anything up. It cannot lift the poor and downtrodden. The only thing that it can do is tear down the wealthy and successful. So rather than going out and out-competing these other countries, so to speak, all governments have to go and say that the other countries are evil and that they're different or something else because they have an inability to declare themselves into prosperity. So it's just creating enemies for the purpose of being loved. You know, one government will say, "Hey, that country over there is evil. That's why you should love us because we're the lesser of two evils."
An invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Freedom Fiends. This is Redemption in the Third Act. I'm Jim Babb, and I'm with Lou Fiend. Lou, we should probably mention that Obama is a liar, and his feet stink.
And a socialist, and he puts the execute in execution branch. But in his, defense, the next one will be just as bad, if not worse.
There are some constants in the universe, and that is one of them. So, you know, we started to talk earlier tonight about the ghost gunner milling machine, which is the invention of Cody Wilson. Are you familiar with the ghost gunner machine, Lou?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, for people that don't know, there's a thing called a lower receiver, which is part of a rifle of an AR-15, the lower receiver is the part that the government thinks is the gun. It's the what they want to regulate. It gets a serial number. If you want to buy one that's complete, you have to get a background check and go through all the rigmaroles and all the laws apply to that. However, you can buy something called an 80% receiver, which, as far as the government's concerned, is not a gun yet. So Cody had the brilliant idea of creating a desktop milling machine where you drop in an 80% lower, which the government doesn't think is a gun. You press a few buttons and run some software, and it turns it into a finished lower receiver, which you can then bolt on all the other parts and have an AR-15 with no serial number, no background check, no nothing. It is a beautiful invention, and his initial batch was sold out. I don't know how many he made, but he put it up for sale. Boom. It's about $1,500 out. It's gone.
I heard he had a big problem with trying to ship. He had different shipping companies refuse to ship his product.
He did, but these things can be worked out, and every time somebody tried to throw up an obstacle, the Streisand effect kicked in, and he ended up getting more publicity, more awareness about how great this is. So, some people are, let's face it, everybody's concerned about encroaching, the growing gun control laws get worse and worse and worse, almost exclusively get worse. However, basically, this just makes the whole thing moot. It's just saying, like, you know what, go ahead and pass your laws. Turns out that, we can make it easy for people to have the tools of self-defense without asking for anybody's permission. So it completely sold out.
Wait a minute. I do have to ask a question here. So are you trying to say that Cody Wilson's inventions are going to do more to protect gun ownership than the Second Amendment and the NRA combined?
I think the concept certainly does, right? So if you want to protect, if you want to protect your rights as an individual, you're better off with some innovation rather than some legislation. I think that is definitely a fact. And Cody is, of course, his company Defense Distributed. He really put himself on the map for developing a 3D printed gun, the Liberator. So people can download that and print it on a 3D printer. I don't know if it's the kind of gun you want to really rely upon, but it also established the fact that anybody can have the tools of self-defense that needs them, regardless of what the central authorities claim. So now I was really lucky because I did not buy one of these first ones when they came out and were quickly sold out. But Ernest Hancock, Freedom's Phoenix, had one, and he auctioned it. He did a raffle. It wasn't an auction. It was a raffle to benefit our buddy Larkin Rose. So he used it as a fundraiser, and I'd like, okay, I'll buy one ticket. It was $20. I didn't expect to win, but I like Larkin a lot, and I just said, I just want to throw Larkin a bone. Well, wouldn't you know it, I actually won the dang thing. So I'll be acquiring it soon and be able to use this tool. In fact, the computer I'm running Fiendphone on right now was bartered in exchange for use of this new milling machine. So I'm already pimping it out.
Outstanding. Well, yeah. Thanks for coming on, Jim. Thanks for joining us for this special 2-year anniversary. Special shout out to the founding fiends, Michael and Nima, and then the fellow fiends that have come along over the past couple years. Thank you all for your service. And I love us, man. I love us.
I love the fiends. Great being with you, Lou.
Well, I hope to hear more from you in the future, both on the fiends and in real life.
We're going to make that happen.
Worms.
Worms.